want to talk to you about the game tonight. I want to talk to you about Trevor Relaford and his legacy. But I do want to talk to you about somebody else. You've worked, so many Alabama fans know you. I came to know you through the Crimson Tide Sports Network. But you were a University of Alabama employee, talking of day jobs, for a number of years. Talk about the role that you had at the university for a long, long time.
Well, to start with, and you guys may have spoken of this on the air already, but everyone in the Alabama family is saddened by the passing of Dr. Joab Thomas, who was one of the great presidents of the University of Alabama. I was a young PR marketing guy at Alabama, barely out of school, fresh out of TV news, when Dr. Thomas returned to UA in 1981. And my first memory of him, quite literally, was of being scared to death. I had to present to him a creative treatment for what would become the first of about 100 TV commercials I would produce for Alabama. And in this one, I had to explain the ridiculous idea of Dr. Thomas sitting behind his desk, holding a textbook in one hand and a football in the other, and delivering the line, "We want to be as good at this as we are at this," meaning as good at textbooks as we are at football. And you never really know how something kind of off the wall and creative will play with what I would call a civilian, somebody that doesn't
right.
do wacky stuff like this for a living. But thankfully, he loved it, and it sort of became one of his signature lines of his presidency. And it is a presidency that is, at least to sports fans, tends to get caught up in the Coach Bryant retirement and the Perkins hiring and the Curry hiring, and the fact that Dr. Thomas was the only man on earth to basically be the quote-unquote boss of Coach Bear Bryant and Coach Joe Paterno. But Dr. Thomas truly ushered UA into the modern era, if you will, from sort of being a sleepy little southern school to being a top-notch research and academic institution. And in many ways, it was as much a visionary as Dr. Denny was, though those many years ago, in raising academic standards, in becoming committed to assisting with economic development. I mean, Dr. Thomas was at the beginning of what ultimately became people like Mercedes locating in Alabama. And the growth that was enjoyed under Dr. Witt, really, if you go back and look at the seeds that were planted, it was really Dr. Thomas that ramped up UA to become the prestigious top-tier university that it is. I'm talking like a UA PR guy, which I used to be for a very long time.
But I want to get you to talk about him a little bit more, because Dr. Thomas is a man that grew up, from what I understand, pretty humble upbringing in Tuscaloosa, actually in Holt, I think.
Yeah.
Had a chance to be an athlete in college, but opted to go to Harvard instead. But his tenure, as you've already discussed, his academic career and certainly his leadership tenures at different institutions, always tied very heavily to athletics. This is a guy that hired Jim Valvano at NC State, did he not, before he came back to the University of Alabama?
That is true. It, somewhat lost in the discussion about Dr. Thomas's association with great coaches is that one. And I remember after stumbling through my initial meeting with him, I remember sort of connecting with him because we were both, as I still am, a huge hoops fan. And Dr. Thomas came from NC State and Valvano and, you know, championship teams, and he was very interested in Alabama basketball and was particularly interested in the fan experience. And I remember Dr. Thomas getting the NC State cheerleading people involved with the UA cheerleaders to sort of talk about basketball game day and that sort of thing. And he was very much a part of that. And from his perspective, and you're right, was a big sports guy. I mean, he grew up obviously in Holt, Alabama, where you know, in the shadow of Denny Chimes, but you know, everywhere he went, he was very much a part of that scene and was a big fan. And you know, that is an amazing legacy, separate apart from his academic career, is that.
How unfair was the criticism historically, I guess, over the selection of Bill Curry? Was it unfair, the selection of Bill Curry over the perceived opportunity to hire Bobby Bowden at the University of Alabama during that tenure? Because so much for people like myself, you know, I was 11 years old in 1981. That's what you think about is during those times, you know, you only hear part of it, but you were there. What can you tell us, and what kind of light can you shed on that, and how difficult a time that was for Dr. Thomas?
Well, let me back up a year or two and just talk about the difficulty of that time generally. I mean, the other thing that Dr. Thomas was very much a part of, and the Central Administration of Alabama was very much a part of, was the funeral of Coach Bryant. I mean, these were difficult times, and it was a difficult transition. You know, Coach Bartow has talked about that sort of thing, you know, talked about it over the years. But anybody in that position is in a difficult spot. And obviously, when Dr. Thomas hired Ray Perkins, he did so with the wise counsel of Coach Bryant. Well, obviously, he didn't have that opportunity the second time around when Coach Perkins left. So here you have a transition into the modern era of athletics where football coaches weren't necessarily going to be the athletic directors anymore. You know, that sort of thing was beginning to change with zillion-dollar contracts and the like. And, you know, Dr. Thomas made the decision to split the jobs. Remember, he also hired Steve Sloan to be the athletic director at that time.
But he hired him after he hired Bill Curry, did he not?
Yeah, no, they were announced almost concurrently, as I recall. But it was a tough call to make, and I think he's unfairly judged because, for one, in the light of 2014, it's easy to say, well, heck, Bobby Bowden would have been a great hire. Well, of course he would have. Anybody can say that now, but it was a little harder to say that then. But I think that it took a lot of courage at the time to break away from the Alabama family to make that hire. And while that may not have worked out in some people's mind as well as it should have, as history shows, hiring outside of the family became a really good thing to do later on down the road. So I think you have to look at it with a wider lens. And to me, it was a tough spot, and he did the best he could. And, you know, it could have worked out differently. But Coach Curry was an SEC Coach of the Year. Let's not forget that as well. So
I was going to say, now, again, you can question whether or not the guy was a fit or not, but it's not as if he was an epic failure. He left Tuscaloosa as granted, it was a three-way tie and a loss to Auburn, but co-champions in the SEC that year. He just had the misfortune of being there during probably the greatest run in Auburn football history as well.
That's right, and he also had the misfortune of being there, if memory serves, and these things run together for me, but the game he lost to Auburn, wasn't that the first one at Auburn?
Correct.
I mean, you know, that was a tough spot as well. And it always gets a little frustrating when you start talking about judging. You know, there's a small margin for error, obviously, and perception can change so fast. I mean, even during the course of a football season, the flavor of the month becomes the guy on the hot seat over the course of 2 weeks because you lose two. Well, you know, let's just look back and see, you know, what could have happened had that Alabama team won that day. You know, how close were we to judging Bill Curry differently? And I don't think we judge him correctly either, because you're right. He left Alabama as the SEC Coach of the Year and was very much in the mix nationally when that game kicked off. So it's easy to make those judgments in the postscript of life, but all of those decisions are made as they happen. So you get the good with the bad, and sometimes the good is not as good as you think, and sometimes the bad is not as bad as you think.
Guy that I've had the privilege of sitting alongside for Alabama basketball for the last 12 years. He's got a couple more years on me. Tom Stipe joining us here on Tide 99.1. You have seen a few more Bama basketball games than I have, but we've both had the privilege for the last four to watch Trevor Relaford play. You judge people at places like Alabama by and large on championships and those that they were a part of. The only championship in all likelihood that Trevor Relaford's going to be a part of is a Western Division crown early in his career. But where will he stack up historically when we're able to sit back and look at what he's been able to do from an individual standpoint during his time in Tuscaloosa?
Well, I will not be going out on a limb when I say I don't care how many rings the guy has or how many trophies he's hoisted, Trevor Relaford is a champion. He is a warrior. He has carried a tremendous load on his shoulders this year and throughout his 4 years. And I think that every now and then you and I just kind of look at each other and without saying it, what we're saying is how privileged we are to watch a guy like that. I've been lucky to see a lot of really great basketball players in crimson and white and in other colors, and he is up there. As we had a good discussion over dinner the other night about the greatest Bama players of all time, and once we got past the platitudes to Brian Passink,
that's right,
which we always have to discuss.
You got to work him in.
Clearly, he has a role to play, but I think Trevor is right up there with Watley, who I think is the most talented basketball player I've ever seen play for Alabama, Enos Watley, particularly as a backcourt guy. You know, there are others. There's the guys that won a lot, like Terry Connor, who happened to be the point guard on some really good Wimp Sanderson teams. There's the Gary Waits, guys that like that, that were hurt and never really... You know, you knew he was better than what you were seeing, and ultimately he became such a gamer. You know, and TR, you know, I've seen all those guys play. But I think Trevor Relaford is just amazing. And to do it night in and night out at his size, sometimes he has a lot of help, sometimes he doesn't. And obviously that's sort of the story of this team. But I think he is right up there among the greatest to ever put on an Alabama jersey. I really do.
Yeah, and especially when you think about both ends of the floor, Tom, as I've talked about, you know, this time last year, he became the all-time steals leader with a full season to go. And he's going to be, he's 37 points away from moving into the top five in scoring. And a lot of those guys we've talked about were part of great teams. And that doesn't take away from what they accomplish individually, but to me it's so much tougher when you don't have a consistent running mate.
And there were
times maybe earlier in his career where he did, with Jermichael Green on the inside and, you know, and Tony Mitchell, who was such a dynamic player. And, you know, there are a couple others that on certain nights have fallen into that category. But night in, night out, there hasn't been a guy, and he's, you know, been able to do things at a high percentage, too. I'm going to pull up the number, but it's not as if, you know, he's taking a ton of shots every night. I think he is a career 49% field goal shooter, which for a guard, to me, is extremely good. Fun to watch how his percentages have gone up from beyond the arc. I think he was at 27% his first couple of years, went to 41% last year, and he's right at 40 this year. I mean, he's not just throwing up a lot of shots and getting a lot of points. He's taking good looks,
right,
and been able to put consistent numbers.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a Marshall Henderson 20 points a game. This is a guy that's well, first of all, you talked about defensively. I mean, he affects everywhere he is on the court. And he adapts to what's going on. I mean, you talk about a guy that hasn't had a consistent running mate this year, but look what happens when Levi really gets it going. And the next thing you know, he's got 6 or 7 assists, Trevor does.
Exactly.
You know, he's obviously doing what he needs to do to help his team win, and that is an ever-moving target this year. But the fact that he can do that and create steals and create offense off of defense, and he can shoot the three, he obviously can drive it to the hoop, which is just amazing at his size. I mean, the guy has got a little Allen Iverson in him. I mean, he's the smallest guy on the court, and he's getting banged around, but yet somehow, miraculously, he can get his shot to the rim and get himself to the foul line or get an and one or what have you. But what he does for this team, I mean, I will say it, there is no question in my mind he's the SEC Player of the Year. I hope he gets it. I don't know that he will. If anybody puts a ballot in front of me, that's the guy I'll vote for. But honest to goodness, there is not a player in this league that has more of a positive effect on a basketball team than Trevor Oliver does.